I can't really follow that. How can I follow that thing? I think it's almost like I can just rest it there with what David has said. David has just given the framework for the weekend in terms of what God wants us to do. with me as a typical planner, would be, this is what I want to do. So just sort of filling in the gaps, I just felt, because some of you haven't been on the whole journey with us. In fact, I would suggest, because of some of the late cancellations, that there's no one here who was here on our very first conference. Not you two weren't, were you? No. In Foundations 1, actually started in this very room virtually 6 years ago, in the middle of winter 2012. About 50 people came in the middle of winter, hadn't met each other, we hadn't met them. They've heard of us, or they've communicated over the internet, and we'd been virtual sort of friends, but we'd never met. And just a whole group of people, we came together. As I said, on the planner, I built this great big program of events. I knew exactly what was going to happen. I knew exactly how each meeting was going to go and what I was going to say and what people were going to do. And after the first evening, the whole thing was thrown out the window. Because something actually happened. We got to realise that no one was actually interested in anything that I was planning. Because for some reason, virtually every person there, not necessarily every person, but every one of them had a link with a ministry to do with Israel. We had no idea at the time. That's all they wanted to do, talk about Israel. So the Saturday of the conference was virtually just one big talk, a conference. There wasn't anything from the front teaching. It was just everybody just giving all their opinions. And it was interactive, and we just felt there was something really interesting was happening here, because God was doing something that we never planned. That gave us the confidence just to keep the thing moving. So we planned another one, Foundations 2, which was in later that year, and that was the crazy one. Me wanting to overplan, it was a four-day conference where there was literally 30 minutes of rest in the whole 4 days. We threw so much into this conference, it was ridiculous. Monica ended up as a complete wreck. In fact, she was a wreck by the middle of the week. There was just so much going on. It's just our desire to want to please, or my desire to want to please. And essentially, you want to give people a good time. And realise, it took me until about the sixth conference to realise that the best conferences are those where I just sit back and do very little and just allow things to happen. So this is the essence of what we're hoping for this weekend. And there is a sort of a two-half situation. The first half, yes, I've planned things. There needs to be some degree of planning. But once we hit supper time tomorrow, there's no planning at all. So after supper tomorrow, Saturday evening, absolutely no idea, which is the way it should be, isn't it? Church meetings, absolutely no idea. And Sunday morning, absolutely no idea. And all we have to say is that by that time, we will have an idea what the Lord is saying to us and what he wants us to do, and just a nudge in a certain direction. And hopefully we'll flow from that. But at this moment in time, I haven't got a clue, you know. Even David hasn't got a clue. And if he hasn't got a clue, then there's no chance for any of us. so that's basically the plan. Now, one thing before I forget, actually, is, as usual, we have a 7 o'clock optional prayer meeting. And the important thing is, if you are up at 7, that you need to know where to go. So I suggest it would be that, you know, the lounge area that you walked through, in between the reception and here, that will be where we'd meet at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. So those of you up at 7, that would be the prayer meeting. Okay, Foundations has been going for 5 years. We've had 6 weekday conferences, 6 weekend conferences, and 2 taster days. So 14 conferences, of which half of them have been over the last year. So, I mean, it's like I've known you two for my whole life. I've only met them a year ago. They're in and out of our lives just about every other week. I've had their drum kit in our front room for the last six weeks? So thank goodness we got rid of that. But that's what it's all about. It's it's meeting together and sort of developing a community of like-minded people, because unfortunately for many of us in our churches, we're not finding the people who are sort of switched on in the same way. And so we'd like to think this is a safe place for us all. And first, my objectives for this weekend is that if there is a call on your life that sort of intersects with what we're planning and what we're doing or what the Lord wants us to do, then let's work together. I'm going to say a bit more about the nation, because the Lord has been speaking to me this week, particularly in the middle of the night. I've had very little sleep, and unfortunately for Monica, it's been not easy sleeping with me over the last week. I think I've been, if she hadn't been there, the light would have gone on at 2 a.m. and I would have been scribbling away notes and this, that and the other. But I think it was connected to this conference, because this conference was not meant to happen. I don't know how many here think we're going to talk about the Balfour Declaration. if that is you, then I'm afraid I'm sorry, Neil.
Well, I know that.
I'm sorry. He didn't know about all this. But I think the Lord has a plan. He has a plan. And the important thing is that we're here together. The situation is we thought that there would be a great desire for a conference on the Balfour Declaration, so we put it in our schedule. And here we were 3 months before the date of the conference and not a single booking. And that, to me, that is God speaking. God speaks for me in the extremes. if a lot of things happen, then he's speaking. If nothing happens, he's also speaking. And I felt then that something had to happen. So I phoned up Quinta to say, can we cancel? And they said, yeah, but it'll cost you about £3,000. And then it came from Monica had the idea of this. She said, why not? She actually said, don't shout me down. This might sound like a stupid idea, but why not have a retreat and just have? So, I think it was a fantastic idea. And as soon as I put the email out about it, within a week we had 30 people. Say most of you here had signed up within a week. That number went up to 49, and then 8 people suddenly disappeared over the last week, which is very unprecedented. And it's not a sense of blaming those people. It's just, interesting that usually for a conference we'd lose maybe 2 or 3 right at the end, usually through illness. But this time, 8 people, all with different things that were holding them back. And, I'm not sure about the mechanics of spiritual warfare, but it did seem very unusual that this would happen. Oh, is there someone's there? Is there a couple of people coming in? We have 2 additions. Oh, right, just let it come. So this is became a retreat. So I can honestly say this has not been planned. I would not have planned a retreat. We did plan that. We had a retreat earlier this year in Wilsey Castle, where about 20, or probably most of you here came. But that, we didn't get to do very much. We just discussed a lot of stuff, and all that really came out of it was we got some help on Sword magazine, and we moved to the next stage on that. But it's clear now that we'd reached a point with Foundations where we need to know where to go next. And I've been carrying it all this time, and I think maybe 70%, 60% of my decisions are probably okay, but it's the 40% of the decisions that have gone wrong that worries me, because sometimes you just need a group of people together to guide. And we have this now. We have whether you know it or not, we have a core group. Most of them are here. We are connected through WhatsApp. Great thing if you've got smartphones and get onto a WhatsApp, because we have two groups. We have the core group, of which 10 people, I think five couples. Stand up, those of you in the core group. There you go, so you know who they are. So. There we go. So 1, 2, 3, 4, Monica and these two. And we have Malcolm and Margaret Baker. Unfortunately, they're two that can't make it out of illness. It's too far for them to come. So we have a sort of a guiding, you know, a guiding group behind us. But we also have another group called the Nutters. It's the Nutford group. It's Nutford, particularly Brazil nuts. Yes, yeah, absolutely. It was made complete when Kayla joined, and it was truly a Nutter group. But there's a lot of people here who are in this group, and this is a group where we just support each other in prayer, and it's been going for the last year, and we've gone through a lot together. There's a lot of prayer, given lots of answered prayer. Lots of support, a bit of banter here and there. And I would say that, you know, we could change the name now from Nutters to Quinters, I don't know, but anyone here, if you've got a smartphone, then let me know, and you can be part of the Nutters. That would be, if that's the one thing that comes out of this meeting, that our little group can grow a little bit bigger, because it's a fantastic way. Particularly if you have an immediate prayer need, you know, you'd post it, and immediately you'd get at least half a dozen people almost immediately saying, "We will pray for you immediately." And we had this yesterday with Monica, her bad chest that she had, and we put up a signal on the WhatsApp, and a few of you prayed, and I won't say what happened, but she feels a lot better. But there was an answered prayer, so you know. Not to have Monica here would have caused some problems for me, I think, yeah. And Monica too. So she's, you know, very important.
Why it's called the Nutters?
Oh, Nutford. We met Nutford. There's a little place called Nutford, apparently, up north somewhere, and that's where we met a year ago. Was it a year ago? I can't even remember when it was.
July last year.
And this was a funny one, because we met, I don't know, about 20 of us or. And all it was meet together and have a meal together and then stay a night at the Premier Inn. So we all sat around this table and we thought, let's introduce ourselves one by one. By the time we'd finished introducing ourselves, that was the end of the evening. So the only thing came out of that was the WhatsApp group. So at least it birthed the WhatsApp group. But so there you are, you can all become Nutters. Now, the thing about foundations, it's now, so you've been going for 5 years, and the interesting thing is it hasn't grown. You know, it's bucked the trend of any sort of organisation that you think is doing quite well, and we have conferences that we think go quite well. We get fantastic testimonies back, and you've got loads and loads of testimonies. And you'd think there'd be sort of an exponential rise in people coming, because people read the testimonies, or people tell their friends to come, or people come back. But no, for the main conferences, for at least 5 years, we've had virtually the same number, which is usually 109. Always the same number. It's never increased, which is interesting. It could be seen as a failure, you know, because numbers should go up. But it seems to be that the model that we've developed with in the conferences, with this freedom in the spirit thing, probably wouldn't work with a number bigger than that. So there is a sense that everyone who comes to our conferences are there because God has brought them there. Some have come to every one, some come to one and we never see them again. We've had our team, the core group that we had, the foundations one, not a single one of them is around. They all left us very quickly. So it's obviously not for everybody. But that's the journey. So I get a sense that what the Lord is doing is just keeping us as a tight group, and he's teaching us. And what he is teaching us, through people like myself, let's say, and David and Chris Hill and others, is to go back to, you know, what the faith is really all about. You know, one of the subtitles for Foundations is Church Unplugged. It's like, you know, an acoustic concert, you know, take the electricity away, get rid of all the trappings and all the razzmatazz, just basic church, meeting together, every person exploring what the Lord has for them. And that's what we endeavour to do in the conferences. And I get the feeling that the wider church hasn't been ready for it yet. We've tried many times, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've tried to get people to come to our conferences from outside the fold. Paul, our teacher at High Lee, who's did very well and has got a large fan base now, Paul kindly helped us with a bursary so that we could get five people to come from the outside just to sample what we're all about. I must have tried 15, 16, 17 people, and it was no. They all found excuses not to come. You know, we showed them the testimonies, the videos. There's something that they just... And they were reasonably sort of, let's say, they were church leaders, mostly pastors, running ministries. And it's almost a case of, you know, I've got it all sussed. Why do I need to be introduced to something different, particularly something that has the word Hebraic attached to it? Now, two people dared to come from the outside, and those of you who were highly, it was Tim Pearson, is someone I've known for many years. He's not necessarily into the Hebraic, but he runs a website. He's quite well attached, so I invited him, and he came quite reluctantly, but he did come. And the other chap was Stephen Bishop, the writer who spoke a little bit about his books, whatever. Well, I spoke to Stephen the week after, because I met him a week later, and he said he was quite wary to come. He'd heard about Hebraic stuff, and he was ready to leave at any moment if it got a bit dodgy. And, you know, he was being honest, and he said, no. He said the Lord really spoke to him, and the whole thing just made perfect sense. So he took the plunge, and the Lord blessed him. And we know that anyone who comes to you know, this is not a boast, this is, you know, I'm boasting in the Lord, but we know that the people who do come are blessed at these conferences. What we don't want necessarily is to always have the same people or to always be preaching to the converted. Our mission field at the moment is the wider church. And if there can be an outcome from this weekend, is to find a way or to pray a way or to find out what the Lord's way is to get through to the wider church. And I had this conversation earlier with someone, I can't remember. Maybe that's not what the Lord wants. Maybe it's a case of we've tried our best, they're not interested, so we just move on. And maybe the Lord is calling us into evangelism. You know, is to go direct to the people who need the message and to do an evangelism in the Hebraic way, you know, rather than the Greek way it's always been done. So that's what the Lord could be calling us to do. You know, I've really got no idea, really open to anything.
Can I just add something to that?
Yeah,
I also spent a lot of time going around several churches in the Hoston area with the leaflet saying the conference is very close on your doorstep. Here it is.
I know we've had that trouble right from the start.
Yeah. You know. On the positive side, I'm glad you mentioned about Stephen, because I'm not happy with still.
Yeah. No, I think he's had his eyes open, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. That's good. So that's basically it. Is, you know, this is a crossroads as far as I'm concerned. There's a lot of questions that I need to have answered, and rather than just forge ahead as I've always done in the past, it'd be good to get some input from people in terms of what we do. Do we carry on with the conferences? Do we try to move the model into the churches themselves? We've tried that twice and very successfully, and with Paul we're going to try that in a bit more in the Bedford area over next year. So that could be the thing is we're only limited resources, so rather than try things out and see if they work. I'd rather sort of know where the Lord wants us to go so that we're not wasting time, because time is running out. David has said, and he's going to say more about this tomorrow, and in fact I'm going to say a bit more about it in a minute, but you know, time is really running out. I've always said that one thing I've just never been interested in is end times, you know. And I sort of say, oh, I hear so many people saying, oh, well, these are the end times. I'm saying, well, they've been saying this ever since I've become a Christian 30 years ago. And then, you know, the prophecy saying it's going to happen, you know, on September the 23rd. That's the latest one, isn't it? September the 23rd, that's the next date for the end of the world. You know, and that's I've never been into any of this stuff. And but suddenly, you know, I see the signs of the times in terms of what's happening in our country. And suddenly there's something in me is saying, yeah, it's time to stop messing about and doing church in the normal way and realising that we're a bit closer to the end. So this is where the idea of perhaps evangelism and cutting out the middleman, the church, and going straight to the people should be, you know, what we're being called to do. So, you know, again, this is all up for discussion. Just a little bit about future. I think I'm going to need prayer after this conference, because I'm going into the wolf's den after this conference. There is a chap who's going to be holding my hand there. I've been to this wolf's den for the last 5 years, and it's been a real pain, but I've gone every year because I think the Lord may want me to come to be there as a witness. And what it is, it's something called the Christian Retailers, of course, it's called now, CRT. What's CRT? Christian Resources. Not CRT, sorry. It's a retreat for those in the publishing world, the Christian publishing world. They have it every year at the Hayes, you know, in Swanwick. And there you get, every Christian publisher is there, every distributor, every Christian bookshop is there, and a lot of the writers are there. So they give us all a little stand, a little trestle table. And every year I've had total indifference. I've been there showing my books. And, you know, it is, in fact, in one of them, my only ever panic attack actually happened there. I thought I was dying. Phoned Monica up. She says, oh, get yourself together. Go for a walk. She was right. I thought my heart had stopped, you know. But it's the only time it's ever happened is when you're looking around. This is the Christian world. These are my Christian brothers and sisters, and they're dressed in suits and ties. They talk in business. Jesus is nowhere to be seen. It's a business. And there are some good people there. I can't do a blanket sort of problem here. But yeah, it's, you know, to actually see the indifference they have in someone like myself is trying to show a different way. And it's got us nowhere. So this year, trying something different. I'm going to be helped by David Shepherd. David Shepherd, some of you know, has been to a few of our conferences. He was meant to be here, but he's not well enough at the moment to come. But he will be on the next stand to me. He's part of the Torch Trust for the blind. He helps to run that, and he's going to support me. Now, I'm going to try something different. And you'll see it tomorrow. I haven't set it up yet. It's all at the back there. So Monica's devised this display that sort of promotes my latest book, you know, Living the Life. But it's a very sort of visual thing. And if this doesn't attract people, then that's it. I'm never going back. I've tried too many times. You've probably been, haven't you? You've been to the CRT when you were running your bookshop?
I didn't
CRT. Not CRT. Oh, right, okay. Anyway, so I'll be going there next. So just pray for me, because perhaps what I'm hoping is that I'm going to be so energised as a result of this weekend that there'll be absolutely no problem, you know. They have a gala dinner on the Wednesday night where everyone dresses up with suits and ties, and they give out awards and they have jokes and stuff. I get a McDonald's. I sneak out, I get a McDonald's, go into my room and I write. Because it's a writer's retreat. So while they're on the gala dinner, their eight-course meal, I'm sitting in my room writing. And I've done that for the last 4 years. And you know, so that's the sacrifices I make, you know. But anyway, that's enough about me. But
Okay, I'm going to just talk about what the Lord has been telling me about, because I've been writing I've written two books already this year, two more books. Kate's been proofreading, and the idea was to bring out four books, little books. And I've started writing the third one, and this book has taken over my life. It's become something, and I know that it's more important than I first realised, because the events in this country have sort of overrun my mind so much that it compels me to make it a sort of a serious book, more serious than it was going to be. And I'm going to introduce this by just mentioning a couple of things that have happened. Right, if I say to you, we will bury you. We will bury you. Who said that? Who? No. Come on, who's the historian? Political historians here. Close. Maybe you're not old enough. Well, we talked about the 1950s. There's a few of you that go back that far. Khrushchev, right? At a meeting, Khrushchev was the Soviet prime minister, or dictator, let's say, speaking at a meeting with sort of the Western powers, and he sort of wagged his finger and said, "We will bury you," and he was basically laughed out of the room, because by that time everyone knew that. That communism has never worked and never would work. But his words have actually come true. And this is what's been driving me. And what really got me going was this week was, and some of you might have seen it, but I actually sort of saw it firsthand, and you might have seen a record of it in the newspapers or on repeat showings, but is what happened on Wednesday morning on the breakfast TV with Jacob Rees-Mogg. Yeah. Well, I watched the whole programme, and something happened before that, which was interesting. It sort of set the scene for it, but it was actually almost a positive thing, because what they had, the day before, they had a doctor who had been a guest on the programme, and this doctor says he could cure homosexuality. So how politically incorrect is that? But they had him on, they gave him the freedom to say his bit. They shouted him down, of course, and they got loads of emails, denouncing him and calling him all sorts of things. He was basically saying that homosexuals are not born homosexuals. You know, again, something you can't say in society now. What happened was that they gave the right of reply, when I was watching it, to a gay activist. So this gay activist came on. And to give a right of a reply to this doctor from the day before, this gay activist, you can see from his face, he was angry. And to cut a long story short, he said that this doctor was so obviously wrong that he shouldn't even have been allowed to speak. He shouldn't have been given the grace to actually say his words, because we all know that he was wrong. So don't have him on the program again. And to the credit of Piers Morgan, he says, "I don't agree with what you just said. Everyone, this is a free society. We should all be able to say what we, even if it's bad stuff, we should be able to debate in public." And he says, "I'm cutting this interview short. Go away, you horrible man." And I thought that was really good. Until the next guest came on, which was Jacob Rees-Mogg. What I thought was it was appalling, because Jacob Rees-Mogg, he's a Christian, he's a Catholic MP, quite high profile. People were saying that he is the natural successor to thinking of Theresa May. They started grilling him about, "Are you going to make a bid to be his leader?" and all that. And of course, he was saying, "I'm only a backbencher, this is not relevant. Of course, I don't want to be the leader, etc., etc." Then
suddenly he mentioned he was a Catholic, which they knew anyway. As soon as religion came in, they got at him like vipers, particularly Susanna Reid, who, you know, talk about liberal. She, the gist of the argument was, you know, what do you think about same-sex marriage? You know, it's like, and she kept saying it until we gave an answer. And then out of that came, so do you think homosexuality is a sin? It's the same line of questioning that was for Tim Farron, or Fallon, you know, which led to him resigning as a Liberal Democrat leader. And then they went on to abortion and say, you know, what do you think about abortion? And all he was saying was that the traditional Christian or Catholic, you know, that a baby, you know, a human being is from conception. But they laid into him. And basically, when you saw the papers, and I also got the thing on the Times, my goodness, it's Jacob Rees-Mogg as a fetus, and holding up a sign saying anti-gay, anti-abortion, and then he's saying, well, that's my leadership plan terminated. This is in the Times, the day, you know, you think one of the more sensible, and you get to realise. And that's when the penny dropped. And thinking about Tim Farron, I realised that we can now officially say that Britain has become post-Christian. When Tim Farron had to resign because his Christian beliefs were inconsistent with being the leader of a political party, then you're basically saying, if you're a Christian, you're not fit to run the country. It's unbelievable. This has happened in, what, a year? This wouldn't have happened a year ago. It's absolutely unbelievable. So that's now what has really got me about this is because I've been going into the background of how this has happened, and the clue was in the quote that I gave at the beginning from Khrushchev, "We will bury you," because what this has come out of Marxism, and it's just unbelievable how this devilish philosophy has seeped into society. And basically I can say that the UK is now a Marxist culture. Marxism doesn't run the country in terms of economics or anything that's important, but in terms of culture, the main driving force, when you think that Jacob Rees-Mogg was said he was basically told, not just by the interviewers but by the papers, that he was unfit to become prime minister or whatever, simply because of what he felt about single-sex marriage and abortion. What about the real issues? What about the, you know, crime, you know, ethics, morality, you know, the issues where prime ministers should be judged by? But no, he's been judged by this peripheral sort of issue that just 2 or 3 years ago just was just not even thought about. But it's almost like something happened to Brexit. You know, up until Brexit, everything was going quite nicely. The Liberals were doing quite well. We won't bother to vote because we know, you know, that our society is never going to vote for Brexit. It was such a shock to the system that something has accelerated in our society since Brexit. And it all comes out of this Marxism, and it's called cultural Marxism. I've been researching it, and it's been doing my head in. You know, and there's plenty of videos out there, and I know Mike's been researching at the same time, and I know David's been looking into it as well. But there is a history behind it, and the thing is that people like myself, unfortunately, most people who are researching and are standing up for going, you know, trying to wake people up to this cultural Marxism, that unfortunately, a lot of them are on the right and the far right. So just because our bedfellows are pretty close to being Nazis, a lot of them, and most of them are totally anti-Semitic. That's the problem, you know, is that the people who are really waking up to this, unfortunately, are not the people you want as bedfellows. But that doesn't mean that they're wrong on this issue. It's just that they've got other things wrong with them. And so when you look at the definition, if you go to the Wikipedia page on cultural Marxism, and everything I'm about to tell you, they'll say is a conspiracy theory. Okay. And this is part of let's say, the secret agenda by those who are promoting this. Because the history, and I'll do it very quickly, it's in the article. It's an article I wrote in Sword magazine, which you can get a preview here. So after you pick his up, you can pick mine up. And it's called The Enemy Within. And basically, okay, this will really summarise it. One paragraph, okay? Now, Martin Amis, writer. Martin Amis, he was out of the country for a couple of years. He was in South America. He came back to this country in 2006. He was asked what has shocked him most on his return. He replied, "The most depressing thing was the sight of middle-class white demonstrators waddling around with placards saying, 'We are all Hezbollah now.'" And he says, and this is Martin Amis, says, "Well, make the most of being Hezbollah while you can, as its leader famously advised the West, 'We don't want anything from you, we just want to eliminate you.'" And this is it. This is the madness in society, is that certain sort of fringe issues, which are sort of connected to perceived victims in society, are all sort of suddenly become the central issues. And the rest of us, and this goes right back to Soviet propaganda, if you are a white, particularly a white Christian man, you are an oppressor because you had your past was oppressive because of colonialism in the past. You are always going to be an oppressor. But everyone else are to be raised up as more important. So you'll never get any of these people who sort of march against Islamophobia or homophobia or any of these things. You'll never get them marching for any Christian causes, because they associate Christianity with white Christian men who have, in the past, have been responsible for doing down all these other groups, and this is very subtle. This is subtle. This is something that came out after the First World War. In the First World War, the Marxists, if you know the basic theory of Marxism about the workers of the world uniting, the Marxists really thought that in the First World War, the working classes would all rise up and not fight for their nations, but all rise up together and refuse to fight. Well, they were wrong. and this is the thing, they were wrong about a lot of things. And what happened was that the working class, or those that actually did the fighting, because they put their nation first. For them, it was important to fight for their nation. After the war, they realised they had to reinvent Marxism. So a group of intellectuals in Germany, in Frankfurt, unfortunately, most of them were Jewish, this is where the anti-Semitism comes in, they came together and they created this thing called cultural Marxism. They redesigned Marxism, so rather than being something to do with the working classes, it's something to do with culture. And to promote their causes, they brought in experts from other spheres, particularly psychotherapy. So, unfortunately, another Jew, Sigmund Freud, his ideas came in, as did quite a few other ideas. And out of this came a sort of a system where they made a proclamation that they wanted to destroy Western civilization. They wanted to destroy Christianity, the family structure in particular. Anything that was good, they wanted to subvert. It was a theory called critical theory, and all it was about breaking down. It had nothing positive. It just wanted to break down Western civilization. Because remember, this was still something promoted by the Soviets. It was part of the Cold War. You know, now the Cold War, we think of, Kennedy and Khrushchev and the bombs and the standoff between them. But no, it was happening very subtly. These ideas got into, firstly, the universities, particularly in America. It got into the media and into Hollywood. And this stuff about McCarthy, McCarthyism during the 50s, the witch hunts against communism, it's been proved to be right. At the time, He was vilified, McCarthy, for supposedly finding all these communist spies in America who were subverting. I mean, apparently there was like 100 of them working in the State Department in the American government. Everyone called him an idiot because he was a bit of an idiot. You know, he wasn't the best promoter of what he was doing. But when they look back 50 years later, they realise he was right. The communists were growing within American society, and the press and the media and Hollywood were promoting ideas that were ultimately to destroy Christianity, the family, anything that was pure and good, everything that, say, Jesus would be at the centre of, they were out to destroy. And out of this came the 60s. The 60s wasn't just a bunch of hippies suddenly discovering peace and love. It was manipulation. The people behind the whole hippie culture were these, by then, aged German-Jewish intellectuals. Make peace, not wars. Yeah, make peace. Does that make love, not war? What was the actual quote? Make love, not war. Was coined by like a 60-year-old German Jew. It wasn't coined by some hippie layabout. It got into the... So the whole of the 60s, the whole sort of, turning it the counterculture, was all part of this scheme. And at the time, you could just see that the films that came out, the music, the whole hippie thing was anti-Christian in every possible way. And out of that, just to cut a long story short, it leads us into where we are now with political correctness. The idea behind political correctness is to look at these supposed victims of society and to make their cause so important that nothing else matters apart from the perceived needs of these little groups. And the LGBT thing is seeing this just going completely berserk. There's 70 sexes now, or probably more than 70 sexes. And you just read story after story of people who have said the wrong word, at the wrong time, have lost their jobs, have lost their livelihoods, because they have gone against this political correctness. And so this is why I suggest it is driving our society. And the reason why it is important is because, well, I said, in politics, it's pretty clear now that no Christian is ever going to rise to the top in politics. It's just not going to happen because of this very problem. And then we have to say, what about our evangelism? And we hear lots of stories of, I think there was one recently of someone got prosecuted for having a Bible in their shop. Just the most innocuous things that they're putting down. That's a hate crime, And certainly anything to do with anything you may say that may seem to be homophobic, we'll just get you into problems with the police. So we have to realise, and what the church hasn't done has adapted to this. The church has not adapted. You've got the Archbishop of Canterbury. I think he's a nice bloke, but he should stick to being an oil salesman, or whatever he was, an executive in the oil industry. Because this week, all the things he could be speaking about, he's just having a go at the fat cats of, earning too much money. And, to make a proclamation like that, and knowing that anyone who's got an ounce of sense will say to him, where do you live? You live at Lambeth Palace? And how rich is the Church of England? How much land does it own? How much money does it have? There's no point of our Christian leaders making proclamations where there's no way that they can sort of stand up themselves and not be called a hypocrite. So we have to fight, and the way we see it is that we have to find a way of representing Jesus that somehow bypasses the church, so we don't have to excuse all the problems the church has created in the past, but we direct people to Jesus himself. Easier said than done. I think we had a few clues from our last conference with Paul and the way that he was using, let's say, the, the rabbinic method in the sense of using questions to deflect or and to encourage people to draw out the truth. And I'm thinking with Jacob Rees-Mogg, what he could have said when they were ramming home how unfit he was for public office, he should say, would you be asking these questions to Sadiq Khan if he was here? Yeah. They wouldn't, because that is, and they call it the narrative. The narrative is Christians are fair game, but you can't do that to a Muslim, because if they asked the same questions to Sadiq Khan, he would have to give the same answers, because for all the bad stuff that the Muslims do, they're still pretty good on abortion, and they're pretty good on same sex. So, but that would never happen in a million years, because, oh no, you know, it says in our rule book, we must not attack the Muslims. You know, the situation we're in Rotherham, you know, this thing with the girls, I think 1,400 girls were raped, some of them as young as 11, over a period of, I think, 20 years. And the police and the council knew about it in the early days, could do nothing about it, because the police didn't want to be called racist, because all the people doing the raping were all Pakistani Muslims. So the police were powerless to say anything, because they just felt that, you know, for the community, you know, the stability of the community, they couldn't do anything. Their hands were tied. And in the local council, needed Muslim votes. And that, at the time, no one knew that. It's come out of a government inquisition afterwards, when they're looking back at all the things that went wrong. They were the main reasons. These girls were just carried on being attacked because political correctness stopped people from doing anything about it. This has come out of all the things I'm telling you, and it is going to get worse. So that is what has really been, you know, sort of riding me at the moment. I'm writing about it to try to help us to Christians to because it is going to get worse and worse. It's been accelerating, and our evangelism is going to get worse, harder and harder. And we've got to find a way to train ourselves and you know, in all situations to be able to represent Jesus, not to represent the church. And to do it in such a way that people are drawn to us and see beyond the political correctness, and if we can expose the ridiculous nature of, you know, just be sort of, I don't know, bold enough to, it's almost like, you know, the emperor's new clothes, you know. They're naked. They've got no clothes. You know, come on, someone needs a little boy to tell them that they've got no clothes. Doesn't people get it? Why don't they get it? Why can't they realise that we're being manipulated? You know, when those people on television and had a go at Jacob Rees-Mogg and all those papers agreed, were they really speaking for the nation? I don't think so. They were speaking for the elite who write these newspapers and who are the opinion formers. The reason why they were so shocked with Brexit, because they didn't realise that the ordinary man didn't agree with what they believed. And I reckon if you did a survey in a town in the north of England, ordinary people, you know, they would call a spade, and the truth would come out. It's about time. It's almost like the workers, you know, of the world, we should rise up against these political nitwits, you know. So anyway, I'm not going to rant anymore, I think. Just to say, at the general election, Jeremy Corbyn acted as if he had won. Okay. And the thing is, he did. he did win hearts and minds. You watch the Labour conference, I think it's next week or coming up soon. That man is seen as a messiah by those who've got absolutely no sense. When he went to Glastonbury, they've even had a song about him. Young people are entranced by him. But he has nothing. He has absolutely nothing. And people are attracted by that, because it's the same cultural Marxism. It's saying that what we stand for, that the truth, Jesus, Christianity, that's all in the past. We have progressed. And a lot of them, they call themselves progressives. That's their term, you know, for those on the far left. We may have a Tory government, but I think culturally we're in the middle of a Marxist nightmare. No one wants to admit to it. So that is the situation in our country. And as a group here, we may decide not to do anything about it. And I'm just someone delivering this message. You know, I'm only saying what I think God is pushing me to say. But in terms of what Foundations does, may be connected to this, may not be. But I just think that, you know, it's worth knowing these things, because I think in a year or two time it will be undeniable. Everything I'm saying now is going to impinge on all of our lives, and to live as a person of faith is not going to be easy. And I think the ironic and good thing is it's not, never meant to be easy. It has been too easy for too long. Maybe we need a bit of adversity to really get real and make solid converts, not the sort of converts that you may see at Hillsong. I shouldn't say that, but, but yeah.
How are you finding your experience with Premier Radio?
well, it's interesting. I don't know if I've told the story of what happened when I was interviewed by John Pantry, and he didn't go too well. He hated my book. He's their main interviewer on the breakfast show. He came in. He was told to interview me about my book, Living the Life, and he was forced to read it very reluctantly. And the interview, what I told you about what happened at breakfast time is basically what happened to me, but by two Christian presenters. Everything that I said in the book, they twisted around as to a negative, even though if you read the book, I'm trying to be positive, but they saw it as a threat to the way that they do church. So one of the quotes would be, what don't you like about the way we do worship? It doesn't, you know, why don't you like Spring Harvest? It's like personalizing everything. And right at the end, the last statement was, so has the church got anything right? I mean, this is an interview, and this is someone that I've known very well, but he just went at me. And the thing that really got me was after the interview is that we had a little discussion, and I said, isn't it strange, we're a year after Brexit, and so many Christians don't agree that Brexit was God's will. Yeah. And he had a go at me. He says, how dare you say that? Does that mean that wars are God's will? And I'm thinking, well, I didn't come back to him fast enough, because of course war is God. You know, God is in charge of everything. And he even threw in the Holocaust, which is a bit nasty. But it just showed me that he's a good bloke, you know, and he's been a believer and a church leader for 50 years. To think that he doesn't understand the sovereignty of God, and you just wonder. You know, these people are the evangelists, and they're the ones that are out there. They're the public face of Christianity. So what is the world being sold by these people?
Didn't you write the song Wonderful Grace?
Probably, yeah.
It gives me the time to change.
Really, there you go.
Aren't See, it's a song.
Yeah, I'm doing on Premier Praise. Yeah, I know. This is why one hand doesn't know what the other hand's doing. Oh. So the girl that's asked me to come in and do these, what they call pocket wisdoms, just likes what I do, so I'm doing it, and I'm gradually putting in the next one I'm doing. I'm going to do all the Jewish feasts, and because she likes what I do, I can now start pushing my own agenda a little bit. But she gets good feedback from it. But everything they put out, the director of content has to agree. So they're agreeing with something I'm doing. And the blogs I do, Yeshua Explore, they go out every week, and so they do that. But on the other hand, they've got all the weirdos, and, yeah. the other weirdos. But the thing is that Premier are massive. They're the biggest Christian media group in the country. It'd be easy for me to walk away from them, but I'd rather try to be a force for change if possible. Because if they got turned around, you know, look at the influence you could have. So at the moment,
you know, I'm still hanging on there at the moment, just that they don't like my books, that's all. Which is a shame, because I'm a writer. But never mind. So that's basically the message I think I had to give today. It's just bear in mind, the world, this country is changing just so fast. And we, as a group who are grounded, in the foundations of our faith, we need to hold on to those foundations and to be real. I think, the thing is, I've written 6 books on evangelism, but I'm not an evangelist. I don't think I've brought anyone to faith. You know, maybe I did 20 years ago, but I've forgotten, but I know the books do. And I tend to think, a lot of evangelism done by people who haven't got enough faith themselves, because the majority of this country, Christians, are not creationists, are not into Israel. And they would say about us, all these creationists, they give our faith a bad name because it makes us seem to be ignorant people. Well, there's the thing, it's the total opposite. If we're people of faith, we have faith that God can do what he says he's going to do, rather than the mainstream who are saying, that's not reasonable. So I think people in the street would rather see a God who can do miracles than a God that's just in the image of the world.
I hope you don't mind if I have any comments.
Yeah. Not necessarily.
It's putting forward the sort of ideas. I think that your name foundation is very important. And I think that it's important in the respect that we're going back to the proper foundation. And my own personal feeling is, and it may change, but it just what came to me while you're talking, is in fact that there's no point in going into all the old foundations. Old churches and churches. That my heart for years now has been to go directly to people, and not to be representing a church, but just bringing Jesus to people. And I think that's the foundation we've got to build on. And you never, I think it's a matter of discipline. The problem we've got is that the established churches are happy; they don't want to change. They've got their program. They feel they're doing, it's working for them. You can go along and say something to them, they can defend it. So don't just bang our head against a brick wall, rather go back to the foundation.
Absolutely, and I think that's what we should be doing, definitely. But how we do it is something, as David said, it's not about us creating our own programs, it's what the Lord gives us to do. It has to be centred on, we're not here for long enough to, I know I've written a whole load of things I want to talk about tomorrow, but I don't even care if we don't talk about them, but rather allow God to speak and tell us what we should be doing, because I just want to hear from God, and I'm sick of, and Monica's sick as well, of me with coming up with idea after idea, and some of them are okay, but I just want to know where God stands. And we have a lot of wisdom in this room, a lot of spirituality, maturity, and we should bang our heads together and really seek what the Lord is saying about all these issues. And Dave is going to bring up, I imagine, a lot more issues tomorrow morning that may be following on what I'm saying, or maybe something totally different. So after you've heard from me and David, the afternoon is when we sort of have these little discussion groups, and just see what happens. And then, as I say, in the evening and on Sunday morning, it's, allowing God to speak and saying, okay, I've heard enough from you lot, this is what I'm saying. And that's what I'd like to happen, and I don't want to stop it. That's what I'd hope to happen. I'll be all talked out by supper time tomorrow. I'll be happy if I don't say a word after that.
Yeah. And I said to you at the time, how
one of my concerns, me personally, is how in the world, remember me, you said to me, you will get that answer, so maybe that's something for them to play into the hands of each other.
That solves something like that. Absolutely. Well, because I remember when that day we were together, the second time I was with you, because it was part of this Bible school thing for the Redeemed Church of God, which is a bit strange, it's the black church. but no one there was part of the church, I don't know. So I was teaching, and there was like four or five of us in that room, and some strange things happened that day. I actually got healed. I actually had a bad wrist. I couldn't move my wrist, and it actually got healed during that day. And Robert had a bad back, and that got healed as well. And the man who was running whose place it was, who is the father, his son came to our last conference. And do you remember Piers? He sort of took over one of your sessions. well, it's his dad's farm where we're at, and at one point he was in tears and he said, God has done something today. And then you told me about your vision and about having a cross on every hill overlooking a town. I thought, wow, this is his vision. And I said, we should go with that. I don't know what's happened since, but maybe
he'll
get the time this weekend to tell us about it, but you know, it's just to be a witness, isn't it? So incredible stuff. Okay, any other comments?
This point of information, though, is it true that there are groups of people seeking to go back to the great church apart from us? May not be only in this country.
Yeah.
And if so, how are they faring, or can we learn from them, or connect with them in Wales? Have you got any?
Yeah, there is a group in America run by John Garr, who writes some fantastic books. And he's asked us to do a link up of what we're doing, but it's a little bit difficult when it's a different country. This is something of interest. Has any of you heard of a group in this country called Culture Changers? Right. Run by a lady called Ginny Cryer. It used to be, So she used to be a pastor of Vineyard Church. And she's got this organisation called Culture Changers, which she's given us a book. Monica's read it. I've only read bits of it. It's a little bit very close to what we do about freedom in worship and stripping out all the hierarchies and all that stuff. And they just go around the country and just teaching these principles. Well, they've had a revelation a few weeks ago that they should be more Hebraic. So God said you should bring the Jewish element in. So she's been in contact with us, and Monica and I are going to see her in 2 weeks' time. So that's something we should talk about, because all through my, since I've sort of been in ministry, there's always been the opportunity of working with other groups, and there's can be a lot of danger in that, you know, because you just don't know sometimes what you're getting into. So that's something, you know, we should think about. So I don't know any other group is doing exactly what we're doing.
I got kicked out from an Israel thing, even though I wasn't Israel mad, just wanted to pray for him. And he was totally into the President Georgie. A week ago, he says to me privately that he's now looking into the Great Roots and
We need to find these people before they are grabbed by the extreme Hebraic roots groups. We over the last 5 years we have developed slowly, and we've lost quite a lot of people we had in the early days, because for them Hebraic was keeping the Torah and the festivals and the Sabbath, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, but it was so central to everything that because we weren't doing it in the way they wanted, they just left us behind. They never came back. And we have to find a way of progressing that the whole church, that is not like a ghetto, a Jewish ghetto. There's something, because there's so much beauty in what we do, in what the true Hebraic is. And the church, through its prejudice and misunderstanding, doesn't get it, because they look at the word Hebraic and Jewish and they think we're trying to tie them in knots and get them, you know, back into the law and all that. And it's the total opposite. So there's a marketing problem. There's a perception problem. And we need to be visible for these people. So you are able to then say to him, well, I know a group, and they're having a meeting, 10 miles away next week. And so this is what maybe we could be developing our local groups who are sort of tapping into what we're doing. So we're all sort of connected, but we're distributed around. Yeah. But it hasn't happened yet. We're still too small and under-resourced, and that's why we're here, really. Yeah, go on then. Good one. I've had enough. Where are our worship leaders? I don't. Do you two want to say anything, Sarah? No? let it rip. Okay, in time, whenever. Yeah. Okay, do you want to say something? Okay. No, she's not ready yet. It's all going in. Yeah.